Our culture is in a crisis, and the solution to that crisis is the gospel message. St. John's Seminary, the seminary of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, offers an online MA in pastoral ministry degree for anyone interested in receiving formation for ministry. This program helps students improve their knowledge of the Catholic intellectual tradition and develop practical skills for ministry. A studio with professional video, audio, and lighting equipment allows our students to have an enjoyable technological experience, a necessity for any online learning environment.
Anyone who is working in and around the Roman Catholic Church in North America needs an education like this. There's no way you could get this kind of education anywhere than at a seminary.
Our online Master of Arts in Pastoral Ministry offers you the chance to continue your education in ministry and designed to provide you with the knowledge, spiritual formation, and practical skills that you need to serve the family of God in our parishes, schools, and other ministries.
By grounding yourself in the intellectual tradition of the Catholic Church, you will be able to go out into this culture and leaven it with the good news. Welcome to the podcast. My guest today is Dr. Alan Vincelette, who's a professor of philosophy here at St. John's Seminary. He started teaching at the seminary in 2004. His areas of specialization include medieval theories of ethics and contemporary Catholic philosophy. He also has a graduate degree in biology. So today we're going to get to talk a bit about metaphysics and physics. We'll talk about faith and science. He's published widely, including Recent Catholic Philosophy, the 19th Century by Marquette University Press in 2010, and Recent Catholic Philosophy, the 20th Century, Marquette University Press, 2011. First of all, Dr. Vincelette, thank you so much for joining me today.
Good to be here. Thanks, Stuart. And hopefully we don't cause him too much physical or metaphysical pain today. So with this.
So we're gonna get into some things that you have to share with us about philosophy, science, the sort of contested questions today about their relationship. Oftentimes, at least in the popular view, the claim is they have nothing to do with each other. They oppose each other. If you believe one, you can't believe the other, which has certainly not been a Catholic position ever. But this seems to be a common theme throughout our popular culture today anyway. So we can talk about that and some other issues. But before we get into the specifics of science, philosophy, theology, and their sort of the epistemologies, I think we should sort of prepare the ground a bit by talking about epistemology, which is that fancy philosophical term, how do we know what we know? It seems to me that much of the fighting about these three philosophy, science, theology, is a symptom of an underlying crisis in epistemology in this postmodern world that we live in. In other words, our current time has little confidence in making any truth claims because there does not seem to be any certainty brought about by one or more epistemology, empirical verification, reason, revelation, etc. So let's start by talking about that crisis. Where would you say it comes from? Why is there a lack of certainty today in any way of knowing? What are some manifestations of that uncertainty in our culture today, and what can we do about it?
Yeah, there is sort of a heightened skepticism today about ability to know, and somewhat ironically, probably most scientists are fairly realistic. So that's like a term where you think we can know the world outside the human mind. We're not imposing truth on it per se. There are structural features of the world we can know. And probably most scientists, and I think rightly, are realistic. But then when you get to philosophy of science, that's not a popular view at all amongst philosophers. And some of the philosophers think that even science can't know, that science just like coordinates data and describes what we see in relationships. But based on kind of the philosophy of Hume, can't really understand anything about the deep nature of relationships in the world or causal functions in the world. And then in general, too, there's a wider philosophy like postmodern movement that's very skeptical about ethics. Can we know ethical values that are objective and universal? And yeah, that's kind of part and parcel of society today. But it is kind of changing, at least in Europe now. There's a whole movement of more return to like foundations, at least of math and logic, mm-hmm. and kind of rejecting the postmodern view is like the latest trend in Europe. But we'll see what happens in
so places. If I understand, you're saying in Europe there they want to make claims that, okay, we can know things of certainty, but the foundation is, are they saying that it's only mathematical that we can know math?
Yeah, it tends to still be anti-metaphysical.
Okay.
So it's not like completely skeptical, mm-hmm. like postmodernism is,
yeah.
but you have like Bourdieu and others, Meyssow and others in France who kind of are part of like a speculative, like realistic movement that are kind of returning to thinking that we can know things about the world, at least truths, although it's more kind of based on mathematics and logic, mm-hmm. not so much like metaphysics.
So when you're maybe teaching in the classroom, talking to young seminarians, and in light of this sort of, as I call it, a crisis of certainty, what are the ways that you see in our culture today manifestations of this crisis that we can't, the sort of practical implications? I'm thinking about Augustine and his fight with the academics, and what he would say is, you know, this is not an intellectual debate, that there are real ethical implications, right? If we can't assent to the claim, you shouldn't seduce another man's wife, because I can't assent to that as a moral proposition, then we're going to live in a sort of moral chaos. So what do you see as the sort of implications of this uncertainty today? And again, what can we do about it? I mean, is it simply, well, we can have certainty in math and that's it? What about the moral life?
Well, yeah, and my take, and maybe this is something we can get into a little bit later, but my take is that really there's a lot of areas where we can have a science or a knowledge of. And so certainly the hard sciences or natural sciences, where I favor the view that we can know the world to a degree. You know, there's always uncertainties there, and you can always kind of get a better view, and you might change a view here and there, but we do have some things that we know. And then also in philosophy, I mean, I would defend the view that we can establish like a theory of value and what values are accurate and apply universally. And there are grounds to hold that if we start thinking about it and are consistent with our reasoning. And part of the problem is a lot of people are just kind of reactive, and they react to things they want to hold in terms of ethics and don't really work through what the implications of this and how that fits my other beliefs. And so it's not a consistent system, and you get down just then everything becomes like a power struggle. You know, I'm just gonna take my view and just go with it and not listen to other people who oppose me. So, you know, here a very Catholic kind of view, we encourage reflectivity on all aspects of what we hold and trying to defend, and I say we're some of the best at looking at like who are those who oppose us, right? What are the opposing views, and how can we respond, or can we respond, you know? So we look at not just our own views but opposing views as well.
Let's move into a little bit more about the specifics of those sort of three epistemologies. We start by talking about science. There seems to me, sort of we talked about the lack of confidence. For a long time, or lack of certainty, for a long time it seemed that a lot of claims being made that, oh, science is the thing that we can know for sure. That is the ground, the epistemological ground. But even, of course, as you know, because of COVID, people are sort of pushing back on this idea, you know, the popular phrase, you know, trust the science in relation to vaccines, for example. But then people have seen, you know, countless ways that science was used as a weapon for certain agendas. So when you sat back and watched the way science was used in our public discourse, our political discourse, either as a legitimate science or as a weapon in an ideological fight, what were your thoughts? How did you reflect on that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, definitely, I think we need science, and science is important. It's funny because, like, what was the phrase? Was it like we need a data-driven, conclusion? Which, whenever people say that, it kind of worries me because then it's like, well, of course we do, but I'm not going to point that out. Like, the fact you're pointing it out makes me worry. Are you really even driven by the data? Mm-hmm. And, you know, are you doing good science? I would say, yeah, in terms of the contrast, you know, it's often thought, like, that science alone gives us knowledge. And, you know, that which is kind of as I think before we started talking, like you mentioned that, and that itself is sort of a claim that's not from science.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, well, that's a claim that's more philosophical. And if you start pushing on that claim and ask, well, why does science give us knowledge alone? And what does science say can explain everything?
Mm-hmm.
You'll typically hear back the response, no, okay, it doesn't explain everything right now, but it will.
Right.
Which it's kind of ironic because then that's prophecy.
Yeah.
And the same people who are right. anti-religion are actually then putting forward like this prophetic view of what science will say, which yeah. is not a scientific claim. So it's more of a worldview, I guess. But yeah, it's interesting the contrast. And I was looking online and like I found a poster that sort of said, philosophy is like being in a dark room looking for a black cat. Metaphysics is like being in a dark room looking for a black cat that's not there. Theology is like being in a dark room looking for a black cat that isn't there and shouting, I found it. And science, however, is being in a dark room looking for a black cat using a flashlight.
Hmm.
So like science is the only thing that it kind of is open to ideas and the truth, and everything else kind of rejects that. Reddit forums, you find kind of the same contrast of science being evidence-driven and religion kind of being based on faith, where you have an idea and you ignore any contradictory evidence.
Yeah.
And believe in spite of it, which it's kind of funny because like, well, if you start exploring history of theology, it's like, okay, who had that view?
Right.
I mean, very few people.
You can not in the Catholic world.
Not in the Catholic world. You can mention Tertullian, their misinterpretations of that thought. Even, you know, the modern people, like Lutheran was more fideistic, but even the modern Lutherans aren't.
Mm-hmm.
The modern evangelicals certainly are much into philosophy and reason. So it just it's much more of a, I don't know, misconception of the relationship, I think. So.
Yeah, I want to get later in more depth this question of how do we think about the relationship and faith and science. Before we get to that, though, maybe a bit more deeply into that scientific method, right? Because I think what's often unspoken about this claim of science is the thing that can give us certainty is underneath that is the scientific method. That's the objective thing, right? That revelation, okay, somebody else may have had a revelation, but I can't objectively verify that because it wasn't me. You know, that was Moses and I never met Moses. But the scientific method, that's the objective thing. That's outside of subjective interpretation. Mm-hmm. How much should we sort of, how should we think about that claim of the objectivity of this scientific method? And mm-hmm. what are the ways that we should be cautious about the scientific method?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And it might help, you know, get a little bit of my background.
Yeah, please.
Because I'm a philosopher now, but really I grew up mostly as a scientist. And my dad, Richard Vincelette, he was named like a geo-legend, like one of the 50 most important people in petroleum geology.
Okay.
And that's kind of what I grew up like. He would take me on field trips, and I was in the science club and science fair and all that, go fossil hunting growing up. So my dad's a geologist. And and it's interesting, though, because, you know, there, you know, you tend to find, like, science, it's not easy, and people don't recognize that how tentative sometimes the conclusions are.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's often a method kind of presented, like, in elementary school, where, you know, you have, like, a question, you have a hypothesis, you test it, confirm it.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure that's the method, you know. It is a method, but it's more of, you know, you look at nature, you find what's out there, and then you keep investigating nature, and you see if you can draw conclusions about relationships, and that leads to further study. Maybe you'll find some evidence that might challenge an idea, but you might end up with being uncertain about the idea. It might be inconclusive, and it very often is. You know, you might not have any conclusivity about something, and then eventually you might be able to conclude something. So my dad's area of geology, you know, you look at all these surface features of rocks and you try to determine, can we find oil here? And it's like, at best, you know, they are successful, like, I don't know, maybe one out of every four or five wells.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my dad, he's famous for a project in Indonesia where he kind of viewed the record in a different way, you know, like turned like the rock structure upside down and said maybe it got flipped upside down, and if so, there'd be oil here. And he presented it to like some other scientists, and they're like, that's ridiculous, and I will drink every drop of oil you find there. And it, they ended up finding like a million barrels.
Okay.
And so I told them, did you send them like a barrel, you know, at least, you know, to drink. But in my own area, so then I worked in different laboratories and with some well-known scientists. So Dr. Joel Craycraft, who's like a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Dr. Woodburn, same thing. More recently, Christine Janus, who's won awards in paleontology. Elise Renders wrote papers in Nature on horses. And so I had some good models. And, you know, they will tell you quite clearly that there's a lot we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I say there are things we know, but it is tricky. And in science, ideally it proceeds by people looking at the evidence, you know, gathering data, seeing what we can confirm or deny. So a recent paper we wrote, there are debates about horses and the hoof structure, you know, is it evolved from like part of the alternative legs? They used to have three legs. Did that go into forming like the frog on the bottom of the horse hoof or not? Because it looks like it could, but you know, we struggled with this question, and so we first found some fossil horses that seemed to have a frog, but when we looked at, but they seemed to, also it's not clear if they were one or three-toed. And so we looked at, like, what we know about the horses back then, and we could not really deny that they could have been one-toed. But we kept looking, and so we found some suggestive horses in Spain that looked like they probably had three toes and also had the frog, so it probably didn't form from the extra toes. We finally found a really nice specimen from the fossil record in Ukraine that actually, like, you know, they're only known to be three-toed horses in that time frame. So the best evidence is, yeah, three toes, and they had this frog. So, you know, it took a while to kind of have the evidence that, yeah, that supports, you know, our claim. But again, it's somewhat tentative because, you know, could it be that some one-toed horse that we don't know anything else about made it over there? Possibly, right? Probably unlikely because we don't have any other record of any one-toed horses in Europe at that time. But it's possible.
You mm-hmm. know?
So there's always sort of a tentativity. And science also, people point out, like philosophers of science now, and I think rightly, that there are aspects of, you know, passion and will in science, you know, and for good or for bad, a lot of scientists, you know, seek out fame.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're trying to, like, you know, have like a major discovery. And if they have something, they don't want to admit that they were wrong. There can be willfulness. And even journals kind of, you can see, like, have slants, right? You know, their biases, the editors, reviewers, they tend to like their own ideas sometimes,
yeah.
Not open to others. And so there's a whole, science proceeds by reason. I think it can gain knowledge, know the truth. I'm not a skeptic about it, but it's not easy. And there are certainly roles to play in the passions, in the will. You have to have an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a sense, kind of a need for virtue, trust in your faculties. So kind of a faith, but open mind that, yeah, you know, I'm going to try to find the evidence. I'm going to try to get rid of my biases. And so Lonergan, the Catholic philosopher, said, you know, you have to kind of have a conversion that you're out for the truth and you're just seeking the truth alone and you're not going to fall prey to biases, because it's easy to
sure.
fall prey to biases in science. So there's more than just pure reason. You have to have virtue and trust. You have to kind of trust your colleagues as well and work with them. So there's a lot of that involved. So it's not just a straightforward, simple, boom, we go out there and we just gain knowledge that quickly in science.
So we talk about the empirical verification, scientific method. Let's shift to the epistemologies of philosophy and theology. I often describe them as kissing cousins because they both deal with metaphysical issues. But I think the fundamental difference that distinguishes the two is their approach in terms of how we know what we know. So can you expand on philosophy and theology? How are they similar and different to each other epistemologically, but also then bringing back science into that? How can we think about science and the relationship with those two?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting question too. And actually, I got interested in philosophy just because I was actually working in a laboratory in Chicago sequencing DNA, and then I was free on Sundays only, but like I don't know how I came across Plato's name. Oh, I do know how, because I started reading like physicists like Heisenberg and Planck and Schrodinger, and they kind of were raising philosophical questions. So I mentioned Plato. So I started reading Plato. I was like, well, this is kind of cool stuff. And so there are a number of scientists over the years who have, you know, recognized that, yeah, science alone isn't going to give us all that we need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of physicists were into philosophy. And so as I got into it, I'm like, yeah, here's another method of knowing.
Yeah.
Why should we reject it? And if we can use reason, let's use it wherever we can to know.
Yeah.
To think that, you know, we're not going to be open to where reason leads, that's not very rational in my book. But you have kind of this contrast, like, amongst physicists, like Stephen Hawking said, you know, philosophy is dead, right?
Mm-hmm.
He thought science, again, is going to know everything. But like, well, okay, does it? Then that's a prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think it's going to know it in the future. And maybe it will, but we haven't determined that yet. And
yeah.
So maybe open to something else besides science. Richard Dawkins, a biologist,
mm-hmm.
he kind of says, faith is belief in spite of, even perhaps because of, lack of evidence.
Yeah.
And Peter Atkins, a chemist, is similar, right? Religion scorns the power of human comprehension, but science respects it.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, what are you talking about? I mean, I don't know what your perception is, but it's not very accurate. I mean, religious people use reason as much as anybody.
Sure.
Scriptural scholars try to investigate the scripture, what textual traditions we can find, what's the historical archaeology behind it. And so both science and philosophy, I think, kind of are driven by the idea that, hey, humans have a reason, we have an intellect given to us by God, and we can know
mm-hmm.
through that intellect the way the world is. And one technique is through looking at what we know materially and evidence that we find, like, say, in my work, like in fossils, what we know from that. Also, though, we can look at kind of more fundamentally, okay, what is a cause then, and what's the nature of time? And if we kind of look at our experience through reason, that's kind of what philosophy is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just looking at the more basic features of experience and trying to draw conclusions from that. And that's really the methodology that it should have anyway, I think.
Mm.
And then, of course, theology. I'm not a theologian per se, but I know theologians also are very similar, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you kind of use reason, but you also, it's not a blind faith.
Mm-hmm.
You sort of like use reason, at least traditionally, to establish a revelation and then try to say what we follow from this if we use more reason. So I tend to be, I guess, kind of a rationalist in that regard. But I think that's very much the Catholic tradition anyway.
Yeah. So we talked about the popular assumption that faith and science are at odds and you have to pick one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about science, philosophy, and theology, how do you think about their relationship? Do you think about them entirely in their different silos and they just fit together as puzzle pieces? Or do you think about them in overlapping ways? How do you think about that relationship?
Yeah, because there are debates about that, right, in philosophy, science, and theology. Are they sort of like, you know, non-overlapping magisteria like Stephen Jay Gould said?
Right.
And incidentally, actually, the title of the paper I just wrote on fossil horses is kind of a takes off from some of his work. And so it was like a paper with like four scientists, and a lot of us were inspired by some of the things Gould says in some of his articles. However, in this claim, I kind of would not agree with him in the sense that I don't think you can say that they're just compartmentally separate from each other, that they don't overlap in what we can know. And it's a bit trickier than that because on the one hand, like when I do science, I'm not thinking of philosophy at all.
Mm-hmm.
When I do philosophy, I'm not really thinking of science that much, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have to kind of, however, say, okay, you know, what does science tell us about space and time?
Right.
And it can give us some information about that. But typically, there are deep kind of philosophical conclusions that actually are more fundamental than even the scientific conclusions when you're doing metaphysics. And so can time, is there an arrow of time, right? Well, you know, we look at our experience and look at the past. Okay, is the past with us now? It's like, well, it's not. Right. I mean, the past, like Aristotle's metaphysics of time, you know, time, you know, goes from past into future and the past is no longer.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, that fundamental experience we have is like kind of set in stone. So therefore, like, it doesn't matter to me what the physical theories say. Like,
mm-hmm.
they're limited by that.
Mm-hmm.
So if, like, there's a physical theory like Gödel's theory of Einstein's theory of relativity, there are solutions that allow for time travel. It's like, okay, it allows for time travel, but it's not possible metaphysically. We know that, right? So that in some ways, you know, at a deeper level, we know things through metaphysics that sort of limit what science can say. In terms of religion, then, it's tricky because, you know, you try to put all of it together, right? Like, what do we know about science, about the world, about evolution, and how old the Earth is, right? And so we know quite a bit nowadays, you know, although there are debates recently about how old the universe is, right? But does that necessarily, like, then have anything to impact us religiously? It does in certain ways, environmentally, aesthetically, right? Might appreciate the beauty of the world more. But if we do a proper theology and then bounce it off what the best science is, right? Like, I think you don't find conflicts. Mm-hmm. You find resolution, in fact. And so, for example, I think what's interesting, like, in biologically, we look at, like, life, and we have life on Earth. Is there life on other planets?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The way there's, now we know there's water everywhere, pretty much in the universe. We know there are, like, organic chemicals. So we know Earth arose on Earth very quickly. So probably there's life elsewhere. But in some ways, that actually helps us with, like, different theological problems, right? Because, you know, people point out, well, you know, what about all the, you know, life seems, like, so finicky, and how do we know humans would evolve on Earth? Well, it's like, well, but if there's life on a million planets, then it's going to probably evolve certain ways similarly, and you're going to have, you know, life evolving into intelligent life probably elsewhere. Who knows? That's actually a whole other question, mm-hmm. philosophically, the soul. And different issues there, but you end up start seeing that, you know, these issues do relate in different ways.
So you would argue that those three should not be sort of in distinct silos or categories, but there can be some overlapping areas. The flip side of that coin would then be, what are the sort of the limits? So what would you say are the limits of these three, and how they can assist each other in a sense, in order that we're not sort of unduly restricted to those limits. So they overlap, but you know, science purposely limits itself to certain things, right? It doesn't, at its best, get into prophecy, is the word you were using earlier. So so what are the limits in that overlap?
So, I mean, I think science, like, if a scientist wants to investigate anything, go for it. But they have to be, you know, open to the idea that, you know, are they being reductionistic, right? So if they investigate, like, the nature of love, okay, we can look at chemically what love is, the will, the free will, how the brain works, neuroscience. But the danger is, you know, you have to recognize as a scientist, like, okay, what can we conclude from the evidence? And are we positing things that go beyond it based on actually philosophies, right? So I think a lot of the researchers on free will, some of them anyway, are kind of driven by, like, a philosophy that, you know, humans are part of nature, can't have anything but a deterministic view of how we behave. And so, but the question is, okay, but what's the science say? And what's our best science on that? And what do we know? So I don't care what you investigate, but be open to the idea that we can only know so much through science.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of scientists want to push, you know, what we can conclude based on actually their philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
And they're often not aware of this. They're often not aware that actually, like, this goes way beyond the data, and you're concluding things that are really based on a more underlying philosophy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for various reasons. So that's kind of, I think, where science works. And then theology, I think theology, you know, it tends to kind of be focused on, rightly so, I think, you know, about our moral, ethical life and salvation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's less concerned with, like, historical or scientific facts. And so I kind of do favor the idea that, yeah, you know, the Bible wasn't meant to, you know, inform us about scientific facts per se, right? It could represent sort of worldviews at the time that maybe science we recognize are incorrect, but it was never its purpose to do that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Even Augustine, as you're aware, probably said that, you know, in terms of, like, the days of creation, right, is that seven literal days, or is it, like, eons of time?
Right.
You know, we don't really know from that. So,
yeah, certainly the great misreading of Genesis is that it's a bad scientific, it's a scientific textbook, it's a bad scientific textbook, therefore should be discarded, but the Catholic Church getting to your point there is, as always said, it's not a scientific, it's not a bad scientific textbook because it's not a scientific textbook. It's a theological text. Dei Verbum from Vatican II makes this clear that it has a very narrow focus, and that narrow focus is for the salvation of souls, which is not to say there aren't other types of wisdom in it, but that's not what it's for. I mean, if you can glean, you know, I'm sure you've heard of people talk about like a biblical agriculture or biblical banking. I mean, if you can get some wisdom out of the Bible, great, go for it. But that's not what it's for. Just like it's not a scientific textbook, it's not an economics textbook as well.
Mm-hmm. And which is not to say that it couldn't inform us about certain things, right? I mean, I think, for example, like ethics, right? If there are key conclusions, right, that might speak to, say, you know, how we need to respect all life, say, you know, and so there, you know, it's not without relevance in terms of like ethical questions that relate to like bioethics. So I don't want to necessarily say that, but yeah, but its fundamental purpose, it was not to teach us, you know, science.
Mm. So I think we've been sort of dancing around this question a little bit. Maybe we should sort of take it on straight on. And that's the sort of question of the relationship between faith and science. And Bishop Barron has been a very good job about this in recent years of sort of beating this drum that they're not opposed. And in particular that, you know, to make that that claim that a lot of scientists or people in general will make, that science is the way of knowing something. Everything, the way of knowing, is itself not a scientific, empirically verifiable claim. Mm-hmm. It is a philosophical claim. Mm-hmm. So how should we think about that relationship between faith and science for not a philosopher or a scientist, but for the Catholic in the pew? How should they think about that relationship?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. And you just caused me to think about that now. And I'm like, what would I say about that?
Yeah.
But I think... Yeah, science itself, we have to recognize, kind of involves sort of a trust in human faculties and kind of an awareness about, wow, there's this world out there that we're called to investigate, and so there are larger things at play here. And it's one area of human research and science, and then religion's another, both in a way kind of are driven by both reason and kind of faith, in the sense that, you know, scientists have to kind of have a trust in their faculties and fellow scientists. You do try to verify what they say. But there's a fundamental openness, you know, to like whatever I find, that's what I'm going to believe in and accept. And faith is, I think, very similar in the sense that you're called to sort of be open to the truths of what God wants from you, and then to give yourself over to that and be open to that, open to challenging who you are and how you behave. And if you don't do that in either way, you get into problems. And so in science, if you sort of are driven by your biases and you're not open to the fundamentally kind of like recognizing that you're wrong and you need to reshuffle what you think, and that, boy, another idea might be better, well, you're not going to do too good. I mean, you may actually have a successful career, but you're not necessarily going to do good in capturing the truth in the long run. And in religion, too, you kind of have to be open to, okay, what's this, you know, scripture calling me to? And maybe I need to reshift my focus in life. And maybe I need to be more trusting. And so you're revaluing yourself as well, kind of what life's calling me to. So both are, I think, aspects of then kind of involving faith and reason.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where I see there's a lot of similarity differences too, but yet they're not as different as people make out.
As you know, I'm in charge of our lay pastoral ministry program. So one of the things I'm constantly thinking about is how do we teach people who then go out into the church and teach? So on a very practical level, when I think of people like pastoral ministers in the parish where they hear this thing, that comment about faith and science that we've talked about, or high school teachers, for example, who like me, maybe they know theology or they know science, but they don't know both. So, you know, I certainly hesitate to talk about this question because I don't really know anything about science. How can educators or pastoral ministers in the trenches, dealing with the people in the parishes, in the pews, in the schools, how can they help young people in the church at large understand how faith and science relate? How do we help them make sense of this question for those of us who maybe know one area or not, but not the other, or maybe aren't even all that knowledgeable about either one, frankly. Mm-hmm. But we've got to say something to young people, because Bishop Barron, this is a point Bishop Barron makes. Yeah, people leave the church because of sex abuse scandal or other things, but really, if you look at the data, they're leaving because they feel that the Catholic Church's intellectual tradition doesn't respond to things like scientism or just the intellectual challenges today. Mm-hmm. It's an intellectually flaccid tradition, which of course it's not, but that's the perception. So mm-hmm. how do we help those people then help the people in the pews? Mm-hmm.
Well, in the first place, I think it's interesting. You look at like what we know about like how scientists work, and you find that like most of the polls will tell you that like either kind of about half of scientists or a strong minority, like 40 to 50, have some sort of like religious belief and a theistic belief in some sort of like creator, say, in a generic sense. And you have, of course, about half who don't. If you look at Nobel Prize winners, it might be slightly less people who are religious. Those tend to be, I don't know, you can debate why that is, right? I think I have my own reasons on that. But and same thing like American Academy of Sciences, those are probably less religious than the average scientist. Doesn't mean that they're right, though, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, so you can look at that. But so scientists are... a fair number of them are quite religious and see no conflict. And what's interesting too, though, the other important thing is like, if you talk to, I think typically like the humble, like honest scientific inquirer, mm-hmm. they may not be religious. They may be atheist, but they'll say, hey, but you know, science itself doesn't have anything to discredit religion. Mm-hmm. I'm just not religious. I'm indifferent to it. Yeah. And I've talked to a fair number of scientists like that, you know, and you know, one of them who's a famous anthropologist is like, you know, hey, if I were God, I'd create the revolutionary process. It'd be great. Mm-hmm. You know, it works great. You know, I'm not religious, but heck, you know, I don't see a conflict. So I think the honest scientists don't see the conflict mm-hmm. because it's hard to see where's the conflict. And that's where you have to always press people. Okay, so if people tend to say, well, science shows this or shows we have no free will. It's like, okay, where? You challenge them, mm-hmm. right? Say, where does it show that? And, oh, this Libet experiment. Okay, so what experiment have you, what about all the later studies? Have you looked at that? Show me that. Oh, I haven't looked at that. Mm-hmm. So let's look at the studies. So if you start challenging people on and trying to understand their point of view, but also kind of challenging them to present it, not just like go off what they read somewhere or heard somewhere. Because, yeah, like a lot of psychology textbooks might have the saying that, oh, humans are just driven by appetite. It's like, okay, you know, but then how do we know that? Mm-hmm. Where's the science for that?
Yeah.
And then have you read this? What about the philosophers who oppose that?
Yeah.
Have you studied that? So it's usually a very limited kind of belief that they would have, and you start challenging them to and really being open to what science really says. Yeah. And that's in anything, right? You talked about like vaccines too. Are vaccines effective? I mean, I got all the COVID vaccines, right? Yeah. But you know, let's look at the science mm-hmm. and see what it says. And it could go either way, you know. So I just think, you know, people need to be open to the idea that, you know, here, what do we know and what's the limitations of our knowledge and what's it based on? Mm-hmm. And don't base it off what you just hear in the press or in popular textbooks. That can be very kind of give you a limited view of what we know. Mm-hmm. So that's, I guess, the first thing I would say. And then in terms of maybe further question, maybe in theologically, similar things, right? Like, what does our tradition say about mm-hmm. science? Mm-hmm. And why should we, you know, reject what we, you know through science? I mean, that makes no sense either, so.
As I've said, I don't really know anything about science. And I said to you before we started recording that, you know, I prepared some questions, but I never really knew if I was even asking the right questions. Maybe I'm talking about, you know, areas of things that we shouldn't talk about or not really at the center of concern. And then that sort of leads me to think of our larger public discourse. When we talk about faith and science, I often think, well, are we even asking the right questions and talking about the things that we should? Most of the time in our public discourse, we're not talking about the thing that we should be doing, which is why I actually do this podcast. I want to talk about things that people aren't talking about. So I had recently did an episode on Catholic scouting. you know. So I guess my question is, what haven't either we in this interview or in our public discourse in large, what haven't we talked about that, that you want to talk about, that you think that we need to be talking about either here or at large, that that is a path we should go down?
Well, I guess, I mean, kind of continuing on what I said, I just would encourage people to, you know, look at, okay, what exactly is it that, you know, theologians believe? And to get an accurate idea, I mean, it it's kind of a shame that, like, scientists have such a misperception at times of, like, what theologians do. And, you know, they don't understand, you know, how they are thinking and applying reasoning about things. And, like, sit down and talk to a theologian, right? And talk about, like, well, how do we know this? And, you know, scripture. You can go through, like, scripture and what does Jesus say here? What are the textual bases for it? Mm-hmm. What are the variant texts? I mean, there's a whole process theologians go through that involves faith and reason. And then same thing, like when it comes to like issues that are like a public discourse, right? Say like climate change, right? So, you know, what do we know, right? And so, and I was at Scripps once giving a little talk on science and faith. And it's like, okay, you know, what basically, what's the evidence? And then if the evidence is true, what's that mean in terms of climate change on the earth? And so just, you know, I think we need to like look at what exactly science says. Then if there's climate change and if humans cause it, okay, if the evidence for that, and then we can debate that as well. Mm-hmm. But then what's the climate change going to be like, right? And then how severe is it going to be? Then what can we do? So I don't know, just continue to be open to the knowledge and limitations of science, because science doesn't always know everything mm-hmm. perfectly either, but
You sort of mentioned your own personal interests. You were studying science, and then you started reading Plato. Talk a bit more about, you know, this. You don't just think about this stuff, but you publish. You were just talking about giving a presentation at Scripps on faith and science. What is it about this area of science and faith and philosophy? What interests you? What makes you excited about this?
And this is sort of a new thing for me, actually, Stuart, because I mean, and I tend to kind of like personally keep them separate. So I don't think in the end you can keep them separate, right? I think philosophy has to inform your knowledge of reality, which kind of bases itself on how you interpret science. Science also informs what we can know through theology if done properly. Unfortunately, like you do find people that are, say, like, you know, really into religion and then discredit or discard science. You find sort of like philosophers who go into science to sort of like, you know, verify their biases. So they're not necessarily good scientists, because you have to be open to error, you know, in both disciplines. But yeah, so I sort of like would kind of have two tracks. I you know, do my science and then do my philosophy and not kind of relate them. But you know, I recognize more lately the need, okay, you know, let me see how they interweave and relate to each other. And so this is a good talk for me in the sense that, you know, I do think, okay, you know, they do have relationships to each other. And, you know, what is the methodology of science? How does it relate to faith? And so now I'm trying to bring them together a bit more. But I have to say I'm kind of just starting that, that journey right now.
Have you come to any conclusions or discoveries about your own work or the ways that you think now that you're trying to figure out how these two spheres meet?
I mean, just a few, not a lot.
Okay.
But I would say one interesting thought I've recently had, right, is that you start looking at like what we know about the evolutionary process and how many different kinds of creatures come about and how things change all the time and then adapt and respond and how it's quite amazing, right, from a scientific perspective. And then you look at, like, the Bible, and there's a passage, I'm sure I'm taken out of context, but the passage where God says, you know, I come to give you life and life in abundance. It's probably human life, but in the sense, it to me, that's, like, actually a great metaphysical claim, because, like, from that, it's like, wow, you know, what God wants is life in abundance, all kinds of life, different kinds of life in different ways. I mean, even parasites live in other things, right? Mm-hmm. Dawkins' favorite example of atheism is like a wasp that, you know, buries its eggs in other kinds of creatures. But those are some of the most beautiful wasps there are. Mm-hmm. They're just magnificent creatures, right? And yeah, it comes at the cost of others, but isn't that still a good, you know? And so you start seeing that, boy, you know, Haldane said, you know, if he was atheist, but he said, you know, if there's a God, what do we know? Well, he has a great fondness for beetles, right? It's like, well, yeah, there are a lot of beetles, but actually most beetles are kind of the same, you know? So yeah. Who cares that there are 1,000 different kinds of similar ones? You know, there's some differences too, but I think it's more in the idea that, boy, you know, this, there's like this divine appreciation for diversity in the world. And if we ever, you know, uncover life on other planets, I mean, there's more diversity there as well. And so that's kind of one insight I had trying to bring the scripture and maybe scientific conclusions together recently.
Final question. We are a people of hope, specifically hope in the resurrection. When you think about our culture today and the contentious issues that we've talked about, of the claim of, you know, science, philosophy, and theology are incompatible, but from a Catholic perspective, and you've even talked about, you know, professional scientists who also would reject this idea that they're at odds or there's an animosity between them. When you think about that and the roles of science, the way it's thought of at a popular level, what gives you hope?
You see, you know, that, boy, if you get into science, you see there's people of all kinds of different faith traditions in science. And they generally kind of like love what they do in science, are open to the truth there. And the more they embrace that, I think the more they're open to, you know, faith as well. Mm. And you have a few people who are very much anti-religion, but it's based on, again, they have a preconception of like religion leads to war. Mm-hmm. We can even debate that as well. Is that right. True, right? Look at the history of it.
Yeah.
A lot of wars, like all the evidence suggests that the causal factors for wars, it may be 10% religion, but it's a lot more having to do with nationalities and leadership and all kinds of things. And so, you know, it doesn't necessarily add up to your conclusion being true. So you just see a lot of scientists who are open to the faith and doing their best. They tend to be quiet, unfortunately. So the ones who speak out a lot of times are ones who are like opposed to religion. But, you know, like at Princeton right now, the most quoted physicist who developed like hologram theory and all these theories of quantum mechanics. I mean, he's Catholic, right? He doesn't talk about his faith very much, but you just find that there are a lot of people of science who just are trying to follow the path and wherever it takes them and see no reason to reject religion. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's hard. Again, I'm not a prophet, like maybe like some of the scientists who can predict what science is going to know in the future.
Right. Right.
But, you know, I think that is liable to continue in the future. And as like some of the old misconceptions are kind of dissipate about religion, I think we'll find more, you know, more religious scientists arising. So,
Dr. Vincelette, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it and enjoyed this conversation.
All right. Thank you. Me too.
Our culture is in a crisis, and the solution to that crisis is the gospel message. St. John's Seminary, the seminary of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, offers an online MA in pastoral ministry degree for anyone interested in receiving formation for ministry. This program helps students improve their knowledge of the Catholic intellectual tradition and develop practical skills for ministry. A studio with professional video, audio, and lighting equipment allows our students to have an enjoyable technological experience, a necessity for any online learning environment.
Anyone who is working in and around the Roman Catholic Church in North America needs an education like this. There's no way you could get this kind of education anywhere than at a seminary.
Our online Master of Arts in Pastoral Ministry offers you the chance to continue your education in ministry and designed to provide you with the knowledge, spiritual formation, and practical skills that you need to serve the family of God in our parishes, schools, and other ministries.
By grounding yourself in the intellectual tradition of the Catholic Church, you will be able to go out into this culture and leaven it with the good news.